Could you build a business that's better for our planet? That's what I have set out to answer. Hi, I'm Marco Pimentel, marketing expert and entrepreneur and host of the podcast, Someone Like You. I become fascinated in finding creative climate solutions in business, and on the podcast, I break down how founders and CEOs are building climate-friendly business solutions that are opportunities for growth while being better for the planet.
And we are part of the worst environmental disaster, which is the single-use plastic packaging.
Can you build a thriving business while challenging industry giants and still prioritizing sustainability? Well, Annie Rouleau, founder of The Unscented Company, proves it's possible. This podcast explores her journey, revealing the business case for disrupting established markets with purpose-driven brands. We'll examine Annie's bold strategies, including taking on these large corporations that lack agility and genuine commitment to sustainability, overcoming consumer expectations, and educating the market about the value of fragrance-free products, navigating the complexities of financing a B Corp certified business in a system still dominated by traditional profit models. So join us as we unpack this inspiring story of Annie Rouleau and The Unscented Company, a business proving that financial success and a commitment to sustainability can go hand in hand. Annie, welcome to the Someone Like You podcast. We have a lot to discuss, and I'm excited for you to join us.
Oh, pleasure to be here, Marco.
So The Unscented Co., but before we begin in your business and what you've built, I'd love to just kind of quickly just go back to understand, was there anything in your, you know, background, schooling, work, history that led you to think that, you know, you wanted to be building a business that was purposeful, a business that was thinking about the environment, thinking about the way that we do things, sustainability, or was it something that you kind of just, you know, pondered on an idea that just started from something?
You know what? All of the above. Absolutely. I do believe if I start from the beginning, and I believe me, I won't be too long, but I was born in a entrepreneurial family. Both my parents had businesses. So really early on, from the age of 6, 7, 8, we were talking about cash flow and building a business and account receivable and payables and even downsize the business. So right then I was very aware of what an entrepreneur was doing, and mostly that you could own your own business and support your family. But I think the big turnaround for me was maybe around the age of 8 or 9 years old. We're 1975. And my father, it was back then the Cambodia difficulty politically, to be very precise. And I remember my parents taking both my brother and I to go door to door to raise money and buy a house, probably, I want to say, $10,000. And we received a family of 14 from the boat people that came to Saint Isidore, which is a very tiny little village where we were born and raised. And for me, that was the beginning of, you know what, I will be an entrepreneur one day, but I will be a social entrepreneur. I knew back then that we could build a business, support a family, and yet be involved in the community. So that was the first, I guess, moment in my childhood that became clear that was what I wanted to do. And obviously, over the years, both my parents telling me, you need to go to university, you need the studies, we will not take you in our businesses if you don't have a bachelor. So didn't have a choice, studied and worked for other companies. Until my father showed up one day and said, you know, Annie, I would like you to join our business. So that's how I got involved in the family business and slowly became more and more of the entrepreneur that I wanted to be. And one day I'm about, I want to say 35, 38 years old. And I'm going fast forward because I know we'll talk about it a bit more. But my father had an offer to sell his company, which he did, and gave me the opportunity to just take off and go around the world for 18 months to learn that, you know what, in my next life, in my business, it will have a purpose, meaning of making sure I build a business around the environment. Every country I visited, it was something that was talked about, that I could see from diving the Great Barrier Reef, where I could see the impact of plastic in the water to really dry condition in Argentina. So this is a very fast track, but yes, I knew I would own my own business. And yes, I knew that the environment would be at the heart of my business model.
Yeah, it's amazing how travel opens up your eye to what's kind of happening and kind of around us. So as we kind of get into the Unscented Co. and the products and the business and how you built it, what I wanted to kind of talk about is just like the soap industry, the industry that's there. And Unscented is kind of, you know, you can use products for yourself, for personal care, but you can also clean your home as well. Like what's this industry been like? In my mind, I think about Dove, I think about Sunlight, I think about Tide right away. When I just think about soap companies, I think about massive containers that are at Costco. I think about liquid that I have no idea where the hell that was made in, what it was made from. It smells like, you know, like crazy. So like what's the industry? Like that's a big, huge industry. Like what does it look like? What does it feel like? And how, you know, how kind of a daunting of an industry is it?
You know what? When, first of all, when I came back from that trip, and there's something you need to know is that I am personally intolerant to fragrances. And so it was something I was already making at home. I was already doing my own laundry detergent since a very early on, 13, 14, 16 years old. So it's products that I was already, that I knew a bit more about, that I knew the components, the ingredients, what was about the products. So when I said, you know what, I wanted to launch a home and body care product that would be first and foremost naturally derivative ingredients that would be biodegradable, that would be efficient. I didn't have a choice, but also exclusively fragrance-free. That was definitely the focus of my business. Mind you, I'm 43 years old when I launched this business. I'm a soap company. And as you just mentioned, there's an industry full of soap company, and we are part of the worst environmental disaster, which is the single-use plastic packaging. It is not only your water bottle. It is your shampoo bottle. It is your dish soap bottle. It is your laundry detergent bottle. So I could not start a business without design or packaging to reduce our plastic footprint. So this was the morning of my 43 birthday, when I launched this business. I told myself, this is it. I'm going to have a home care, body care product that will be efficient, biodegradable, exclusively fragrance free, and designed to reduce single use plastic packaging. Now, like you said, it is a huge industry with, I want to say, like the big three. There's not very a lot of competitors, but they're huge. And for me, the being very different by offering Unscented and offering refills to reduce your plastic footprint, for me was a good enough reason to launch myself in this industry. They are big, yes, but they're not agile. They are big, absolutely, but they're not biodegradable, and they're not thinking about the plastic packaging. and there's no innovation. For me, it was the right industry to have an impact on the product itself, like the formula itself, and the packaging. So I could actually launch a business, have an impact in both the content and the inside of the product, bring innovation, and make a difference with a product that is used daily with everyone in your family. So I was able to have a big impact. I cannot compete with Tide, and I cannot compete with Down. I don't wake up in the morning thinking about these competitors. I just decided to focus on a very niche market that they're not doing, because the only purpose that they have is to get the latest fragrance there is, spring fresh and Niagara Falls fresh smell, whatever. And so I said, you know what? I'll stay in the unscented market. I'll focus in that. I will become the reference in that. And I will make sure to promote a sustainable lifestyle. Guess what, Marco? And since 2019, when Greta walked the streets, when Starbucks started to promote the turtles with the straw in the water, the plastic island in the ocean, it became of interest. And now, today, consumers, not only the segment of unscented is growing, but your consumers are looking for investing in businesses or buying a product that has a positive impact, that has a, I want to say, zero waste impact, that also contributes to their values also. So they do want to buy from companies that does take care about the environment. So just for that, I have a big enough business to grow and to truly have a business model. Do I want to be and compete with Tide every morning? I don't. There's a space for me. And there was a white space for my type of business on the shelf. Does that answer a bit of the question?
It does, yeah. And it's interesting about the fragrance stuff, because I love to bake and cook, and I'm Portuguese, and so we have this like famous Portuguese sweet bread that my mom makes every year, a couple times a year. And I remember one time we used tea towels to cover them as they rise, and she had washed them with, you know, some sort of Tide. And, you know, it's this whole, like, the night before, the next day, you bake all these things, we get these 8 beautiful breads, and you know what? They all tasted like soap. And it was leaching from these tea towels. And it was just like, it's such a silly example, but it's just an example where, you know, like how powerful this stuff is, and how it can, you know, go from one product to the next. It leaches everywhere. And it's the same, obviously, like plastic and bottles and everything. And so one kind of the big thing when people think about disrupting, and you know, you're staying in your own lane, you're doing your own thing, and, you know, maybe you're not thinking about those competitors, but as you scale and get bigger, they might start thinking about this. But when we think about the environment and sustainability, so where the product is, how it's made. So like, are these other competitors, is this like, you know, are these soaps made from some sort of petroleum-based product? You know, often they're in huge containers. And I know that there's been some movement around like more concentrated type of soaps as well, to help with, you know, less weight, which equals, you know, less shipping costs, which is more environmentally friendly. And then obviously you have, you know, packaging and end of use packaging and plastic. So like, there's a lot of environmental factors into Tides and all these big kind of companies that are out there. When you think about that, how does that relate to what you're doing, and is that important?
Actually, you know what? I'm a firm believer that because I had an unscented product, because I had a refillable product, I needed to make sure that I offer what the customer is used to. Let's say shampoo in a bottle of 500 ml or 473 ml. So I needed to make sure that I offer them what they're used to buy. So then I get their trust when they try my product, and they test the quality, they test the performance, they test the smell. They really want to have unscented because, Marco, right when I launched the unscented company in 2017 or end of 2016, everyone would tell me, Annie, unnatural product? No, you can't go there. It doesn't work. It's water. It's too expensive. And it does not foam. And I would say, oh, okay, well, mine do. And it's not too expensive. I'm competitive. And they said, yeah, okay, no, Annie, unscented, if it doesn't smell lemon or lavender, it's not clean. So the performance was associated with the fragrance itself. And oh, by the way, why don't you refill your bottle twice? Because it's a solid plastic and it will last forever. So really, I had three strikes at the beginning. And I find that, how can I say that? That today, customers, not only do they respond to my concept, they're actually looking for it.
Every week on Someone Like You, we dive into stimulating conversations with founders, entrepreneurs, business owners, and the likes who are consciously and successfully creating sustainable business solutions for the long haul. Tune in every week for a new inspiring conversation on leading climate solutions. And if you're enjoying the podcast, please share it. And also, don't forget, subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review.
That's it. Building the trust with the customer was first and foremost. That was the most important thing to me. So once I gained that trust through performance, through quality, then I'm able to introduce innovative products like the shampoo bars, the conditioner bars, the toilet tablets, the dish tablets, the laundry tablets, where we have a different type of product to reduce the plastic footprint. But before I did that, if I would have started like that, I don't think I would have been able to build as much of a brand that I'm able today, because I decided to play on the same level as my industry and then introduced different type of products. So yes, I'm against those big containers at Costco and those big bottles on different at Loblaws and Metro and Sobeys, but yet beside it, I have a different product, innovative, solid, water-free, plastic-free. So that's the way also I kind of differentiate myself from my main competitor today.
Yeah. And that's I think what you just spoke about is a very kind of key difference and something to kind of dive a bit more into, because when people are thinking about products that are, you know, more purposeful, more sustainable, more climate friendly, often there's a lot of things that the consumer potentially has to change in order to buy it or to be like, oh, change my life. You know, so what you said though is you had to build the trust of the customer first by going after the products and sizes that they were used to in the formats that they were used to. And once you got that trust, you were able to expand that market. And so I guess when you first started, as same as a tech company, as same as a, you know, a CPG company, you're going to have your early adopters, the people that are, you know, you go to a farmer's market and you have your bottles there. People are like, what is this? This is amazing. And they tell their friends and they do that. Was that like how you launched? Was it, you
absolutely
know, very grassroots?
Very, very grassroots. And still today, you know what? I take care of my grassroots community because they're the ones who's helping me also bring innovation. So you can't drop them even if you start growing your business, because they are essential to your brand and to the innovation. So absolutely. At the beginning, I really went to the B2B industry more, meaning the yoga studio and the gyms and the daycares and places that I knew that fragrance-free would be attractive. And so by putting the bottles at the yoga centers in Montreal, then the clients started noticing. So I had really the aspirational customers, grassroots, and slowly opening up retail stores, online store. And that's really from $79 the first month of sales. So really starting small by knocking on doors of customers and B2B businesses to promote the brand and to promote the products. Very, very core at the beginning of the business. Absolutely. I knocked on doors. And today, you see, I have high-end restaurants that want to have unscented products in their bathroom or their all-purpose cleaner or their dish to wash their wine glass, all the way down to men that go hunting and fishing that don't want to smell like all those fragrances because they can attract bugs or mosquitoes, or they can lose a good potential catch. So today I really cater to the mainstream, but I don't forget about my grassroots.
Yeah, and that's that other question there is the early adopters, and you mentioned the formats that were similar allowed you to kind of take those kind of customers and product expand because they've already mm-hmm. built trust. They really like the product. But talk a little bit about the journey from to get into that mainstream. Was that, you know, through building into distribution centers to get into Whole Foods, for example? Like how did you make that step from
the step early started adopters? The step started really to start with the really B2B directly in the industry to get noticed. And after that, I went to see the small natural specialty stores here in Quebec. So I would really go where the customer was, where that grassroots community was. And that's how I started. Slowly after the first large Canadian retailer that I signed was Bald Barn. So the owner of Bald Barn, Jason Hofield, wife actually, purchased her products on my website. And I didn't have that many customers on the website. So I would really Google every single one and where they lived. And was it in Toronto, Montreal, Vancouver? It just fascinated me how people found me online. And so I reached out to Bald Barn and I offered the product. I said, listen, you're buying it online for your own use. Why not going into your store? And sure enough, that was my first retailer store. And Marco, to be very honest, the first order I got was $79,000. I just looked at that number 15 times and looked at the zeros to make sure it was not $79 or $790. And I just couldn't believe it. So there I was across Canada and I did Dragon's Den in Toronto on CBC, and sure enough, Canadian Tire was the second large retailer to bring me, and Greg Hicks, the CEO of Canadian Tire, showed up on my doorstep and say, Annie, we're going to distribute your products across Canada. And that was, I guess, you know what, you get that turning point or that moment in your business, that was the biggest moment I had. And then they distributed and they're still one of our biggest retailers. So it went from being in the small grocery, specialized, natural, all the way to Bald Barn and Canadian Tire through. And after that, it kind of, we needed to absorb all that. Slowly, the Metros and Sobeys came on board in Quebec only. So I stayed very, very local in Quebec. And as you say, I had the opportunity to open a distribution in Canada that gave me the rest of Canada. But that's over the past, I want to say, 4 years that we did that.
And when you think about that success and that scale that you've built, how much of it would you kind of contribute to the marketing, or is it really kind of the core purpose of being like, you know, it's unscented? Like, what do you think were really, the just maybe two or three main drivers for consumers to adopt it and want to? Obviously, your storytelling, you're on Dragon's Den, and people are getting excited because you're able to do that. But like, you know, that takes you only so far. So, but you kept growing. So what do you think on the marketing side worked that really kind of captured?
First of all, like you say, we're a marketing company first. I'm not a soap company, because you need not only to build the story, you need to live the story. And since it was my story, my personal story, it was not fabricated. I didn't go see a marketing agency to build the story. It was easier. And I think the authenticity behind the brand was definitely a big factor to grow the brand awareness. And I think definitely we have put 10 people around the table, three of them love our products because it's exclusively fragrance free. Three of them likes it because it's eco-friendly and I have refills and solid. And the balance is because we're a local company manufacturing locally, from the bottles, to the liquid, to the labels, to the boxes. 76% of my products and components are manufactured within 500 kilometers from my head office in Montreal. And that resonates also with consumers today. So I guess I was able to play not just on the one type of value, but those three values after the pandemic, being local became important, and we were truly a local company. And again, I do believe that consumers have a lot of choices. Your story has to be clear, it has to be authentic, and it has really, it has to be felt through your marketing. So I do believe that. Second, I think that growing in Canada, the rest of Canada, and now opening up a bit slowly and controlled in the US is definitely contributing also in the growth of the business. But that's it. I'm only North America and I'm only part of the US. I don't want to grow the entire US immediately. It's way too big.
Yeah. And that, you know, the manufacturing is how key was that on decision-making to be able to do everything? Because that is, you know, very, very key also to control product quality and everything, but also environmental impact, being able to produce it very closely, shipping, all these things. Like how key was that decision to, like, you know, because a lot of people could say, well, I'm just going to create the story. I'm going to create the brand and I'm going to outsource all the manufacturing. But you chose not to do that. You chose to do it all in-house and to do this manufacturing in-house. How important was that decision?
Yeah, but you know, Marco, no, I don't do any manufacturing, but I choose my manufacturer within 500 kilometers.
Yeah.
So it's all subcontracting. It's all what you call contract fillers. But for me, I grew up looking at my parents and he always told me every discussion we could have, any local content is important. To have a good, healthy, sustainable economy in Quebec, you need to think about investing in your own ecosystem. So that's how I grew up. It was never an idea for me to go and outsource in Quebec. So outsource internationally, that was never considered. I do believe we can do it locally. I do believe also a Canadian buys the product, a Canadian works for it. When I will sell more in the US, I will have the same philosophy. An American buys a product, I hope an American will produce the product. So we will have contract fillers also for that market. So, and if I stay focused here, I can then grow the business and make sure I don't have too much collateral damage, because I need to grow with my suppliers and I need to also help them grow. And right now, growing, when they talk about growing pains, that's exactly what we're going through, because you need to help also your suppliers grow with you, which I want to do, which that's part of my values. And I love driving to my suppliers and be able to fix issues, to bring innovation, to I'm happy doing that. I get a sense of commitment, and I'm proud of doing that. And as a B Corp certified business since 2015, I would not have done that if I was not also certified.
Yeah, and obviously that kind of purpose and making sure that you're keeping that local makes a huge difference. But just being able to, you know, quickly drive and meet people and see them and talk to them and innovate with them is really important. So, but and as we kind of think about the future, like what's the next kind of 3 to 5 years? And like in my mind, I think like, you know, yes, you're not thinking about the bigger players in the industry, but if I think in 10, 20 years down the line, mm-hmm. you know, if I think about the Tides, the Doves, like I do feel like at some point, you know, they're either going to have to innovate and change their processes. They start to see companies like the Unscented Co. starting to get market share, seeing that consumers want to grab that, hearing from retailers that they're not the type of products that people want anymore. Do you see a future where, you know, they start to innovate in that space? Or do you think that is a future where, you know, they acquire an Unscented and use their distribution to grow it? And like,
I think
like, what does that future for you think looks like?
Over you know that, what? Over the they've already started to go into that, I want to say, space. All those big, the three major of my industry, they all purchased into the natural segment because that's much easier. I have a vision and a mission that I will have no more plastic bottles within the next 10 years. No more liquid. No water also, because I do believe 20 years ago, the carbon footprint was definitely something on everyone's mind. Today, it's the plastic footprint, but in 10 years from now, it will be the water footprint. So that's my innovation. That's where I want to be as a brand. For the bigger ones, yes, they will, and they have already started innovated. The only thing is that the consumers are not trusting them to truly do it as a business sense, but as a marketing opportunities. And the more we're going to grow the business, and the more the consumers are aware, and the more the consumers are reading, less trust they'll have in those companies to do it and do greenwashing. So I do believe Unscented, if we stay to and we stick to our vision and our mission and our story and continue to innovate, we will have a space on this market. Because our innovation turnaround, it's much quicker. And as I told you, I'm doing it as contract filler. So I'm not stuck with a huge plant that only fills up bottles and that my only business success is on filling bottles. So that's not where I want to be. I want to be able to innovate and not even be recognized for just a liquid in a bottle and a plastic bottle. So yes, they will innovate. They've already purchased other in my field, but I'm kind of a niche. So I'm sure I'm going to be left alone for a while, but I would be lying to tell you if they have never showed up on my doorstep. They've already noticed me. Actually, 5 years ago, P&G Innovative Center sent me an order on my website. They wanted to purchase some products, which I sold them, and I wrote a little note in the box saying, "My God, I'm flattered, but a bit surprised." And that was it.
Yeah, well, that's you've saved. I think the number is probably closer to over 2 million plastic bottles now. And you're wanting being innovative, and water is something that right now isn't talked about as much, mm-hmm. but you are right. The projections for that too do not look obviously very good either into the future. And so I hope that Unscented starts to get more and more notice. And I think that consumers are starting to become more aware. Just kind of that last question there is around price, because you did talk about that a little bit. Mm-hmm. But how important is that? And do you think that we can do all of this stuff when it comes to all of our home cleaning, our personal hygiene cleaning and all this stuff? Can we do it at a price point that is still good for the environment, that's not putting a bunch of plastic into our oceans and everywhere, and still be able to cater to kind of the masses?
I think so. Absolutely. Have I reached that point yet? It's a bit hard for me because the volume is not quite there. But since 2 years now, I see the growth, how it affects the cost of the products. So I do believe within the next 3 to 5 years, we'll reach a volume where, you know what, there's going to be more on the bottom line. And yet having prices that are competitive in my segment, in the natural segment. I'm not competitive in the dollar store. I'm not competitive in different stores that's what they sell. But yet that's not my customer either. So I do have the grassroots. I do have the aware customer. I have the customer that wants to have an impact, but I don't have all customers. So I think we need to make sure that we keep a price strategy that is affordable and yet that permits me to stay alive and have profit at the end. If not, it's not worth having a business. And so far we've been able to do it.
Yeah, and that's a key thing, is that you've been able to build a business and scale it and yep. also be profitable and being able to grow it. And I think that's kind of the key thing, and to show that obviously there are consumers that are really becoming more and more aware, and that doing the right thing, as you said, it's been a purposeful mission, has also mm-hmm. been a profitable one, which is amazing to hear. So thank you so much for joining us. Where can listeners find a little bit more about either yourself or a little bit more of the story of Unscented?
We've got our website at unscentedco.com. Definitely social media, always unscentedco, my LinkedIn, Annie Rouleau. And we're distributed across 7,000 point of sales in Canada. And so I do believe now, from pharmacy to hardware store, all the way down to grocery, they carry our products.
Annie, that was an incredible conversation to hear about the Unscented Co. and the growth and, you know, but you've been able to master this purpose and profit thing. And part of that purpose and profit was that you became B Corp certified, 15. I think you said in 2016. Mm-hmm. 15. But there are some challenges with B Corp. And one of them was just like scaling means yeah. that typically you need finances to scale, and you have challenges with the banks. And so can you maybe just chat a little bit about like what those B Corp challenges are?
When you're
banks?
B Corp, your values are so at the core of your business. It's part of your DNA. It's your business model. So you always start a meeting with the financial people, with the bankers, the investors, with how many bottles you saved from the environment and how many, like your KPIs are non-financial. And I don't believe right now that the banks are ready for my type of conversation. I do believe we're still evaluated on the four financial ratios, and that's where you get your financing, and we have to change that completely. We absolutely need to have non-financials, KPI ratios that we go to the bank and they actually make sense and that resonates to them, and they can actually lend you money on that. It's been a challenge to grow a business not having very high profitability, sometimes where I was just flat, but I kept everything in Quebec, and we're still managing a business with making sure the environment and the community is at the heart of our mission.
Yeah. And there's been a lot of talk about how we measure GDP and that needs to change. There's talk about true exactly. cost accounting as well, where what's the actual cost of, you know, goods when you consider all of those type of things. So incredibly important. So amazing. Thanks so much again for joining us.
But thank you, Marco, for having me.
I hope you've enjoyed today's episode of Someone Like You. We're a new podcast, and I would love if you can do a few things. One, please share the podcast with a friend, a family member, a work colleague, anybody that you can think of that would enjoy learning more about these incredible brands. Please also support these type of companies. They're doing the hard thing, and the hard thing often takes a lot of people to get on board. And don't forget, please subscribe on the platform of your choice and give us a rating and review. I'm Marco Pimentel. Thank you for joining us today. For more information on Someone Like You, you can find us on Instagram at Someone Like You Podcast with all the links to the podcast, our website, and more information about the brands that we feature. Thank you again.